Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome back to the official Project Blue Book podcast. I'm your host, Tara Bennett, a senior producer for Sci-Fi Wire. So this week's episode was a fun one. It's The Scoutmaster, and it introduced alien skulls. It had a twisty mystery, and it had the great Graham Greene as a guest star, as well as Michael Imperioli. And it was quite the throwdown with one of our podcast guests today. So we're going to drill down into all of that creative goodness with creator and co-executive producer David O'Leary.
Hi.
Thanks, Neil.
Give it up for the big fella.
And showrunner executive producer Sean Jablonski.
Hello.
Give it up.
Our frequent in-studio hero, Captain Quinn, Michael Malarkey. Hello again.
Hey, guys.
And returning to us through the phone lines from the Great North, taking time to be with us on his birthday, General Harding himself, Neil McDonough. Happy birthday, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Happy birthday.
Come on, Malarkey. I've heard your album. You can sing like crazy. Let's hear something.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Thank
One,
you,
two, three.
And talking about your love, babe. Somebody, I forget the Barry White song.
I love that. A love song is better.
Neil is 25 years old today, and it's a big day for him, man.
I love it.
That's amazing.
It's so
Congrats,
great.
Congrats, brother.
Yes. Have a wonderful day. Hopefully it gets better from this point on for the rest of your day.
I'm coaching my son's basketball tournament for his school all day today. So if it gets a little loud in the car in a few minutes, there'll be a bunch of 12 and 13-year-old boys screaming. So
that's good. Explanation, no aliens that have invaded your car. It's
Not
all
yet.
Clear. So.
And, you know, kind of appropriate for the case, right? We got some screaming kids as well.
Yes.
So this can just play
that's
into
right.
it.
You're into theme.
Nice segue.
So with that, let's get into the phenomena of the week. And you guys introduced the elongated skulls, and you kind of mashed it up with the UFO in the woods story. So tell me about how that all came together to being the frame for the A story this week.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the Scoutmaster case is a famous case. Captain Ed Ruppelt writes about it in his book. Just a mysterious one that they were never quite sure what to do with. I mean, you have this 20-something-year-old scoutmaster and these three scouts seeing something inexplicable in the woods. He goes out and investigates, and the next thing you know, he's singed. There was heat from above. He's petrified. He's startled. But it was also one of those cases where it dealt with a UFO witness who in some ways is an unreliable narrator. He had a bit of a sketchy past. He was dishonorably discharged, I believe, from the Army, I forget, but for like stealing a car. Even in the chapter of the book, I think it's just something like the greatest UFO hoax in history or not. So it was very unclear because there was physical evidence. It was just a fascinating case that we just really wanted to tackle.
And then we've also got in parallel the promised storyline that Michael said last week is that we get Rizzuto back. Michael Imperioli comes back in again, and we get this amazing back and forth interrogation between the two of you. And so, Sean, when you're looking at crafting this really heightened moment that in a beautiful way really shows off what Quinn can do against a really interesting rival, tell me about crafting that encounter.
Well, first of all, you've got two amazing actors in a room together, so that was a tremendous amount of inspiration. It was also a bit of a throwback. I mean, I started, I guess you could say, my career way back on Homicide, Life on the Street.
Such a great show.
For NBC, which was very famous for its interrogation scenes, Law and Order. I do have a background in there. And so to me, the idea of an interrogation scene is writing performance at its most bare and exposed as two people sitting at a table. And so the impetus was, I said, I want to do it where you don't realize it at first, but actually Quinn is the one being interrogated.
Yeah.
And so starting with that premise and then sort of unspooling it backwards from there, you know, the idea of the gun and the Russian roulette was something I felt I hadn't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you putting two people in a room, it's like even I in the room, and we talk about this too, it's like if you look at the scene, you go, right, okay, these two people, there's going to be an interrogation now. How many? It's just like such heavy lifting. And then when you sort of flipped it like that, where it's like, well, this guy could technically get up and run out of there at any moment.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? How do you keep him there? Well, you got to keep him there with some really interesting situations. And then, of course, we find out later he had to stay. He wanted to stay. He was there on his own mission. And so that was the approach. And then I've said it before here. I think it's really a testament to the actors we have on the show that when you write something and you see it performed, that they take it to another level. You see it and you're like, I didn't know it could even be that good.
It was fantastic, Michael. You had teased that you were going to have a great scene with Michael Imperioli. So tell me about when you saw those pages, just the two of you and the intensity of your characters and the intelligence of your characters coming through and the kind of raw passion.
It was a gift, really. And thank you for the words. Really appreciate that. Like I said, when I first saw that Imperioli was cast, I was thrilled because I'm a fan of his work. Mm-hmm. Then I heard that there was going to be some kind of torture scene or something like that. And I was like, oh, no way. That's going to be awesome. And then when I read it, I was like, oh, wow, this is actually cat and mouse chess. Super clever. It gives you a chance to sit back with the material and let the words and the looks do the work as opposed to brute force. But we rehearsed the hell out of it before we even got up there. I mean, I felt like it was a really important scene, and it was pretty intense at that moment in time shooting. So I was like, I want to make sure we give ourselves an adequate amount of time to come to the table with ideas and prepare. Yeah. And we did. And we came in, and we had our ideas about it, and we're just ahead of the game with all that. And I feel like it really shows in the work, and it's interesting, and I'm very proud of it.
The nice thing is that we also get to fold in our generals. Neil, you know, Harding ends up having a whole lot to do with this situation. When you found out and got to see in the script that one of the big turns is based on your machinations behind the scenes, how did it make you feel about Harding?
It's interesting. Harding is such a strangely complex guy. You never know if Harding, and this was the question that we had right from the very beginning, what is the area of darkness with Harding? And it's hard to see because there he is playing chess, and that is like one of the sweetest, nicest guys, like one of the guys you want to go have a couple beers with. And then you see him on the phone screaming at someone, and you know, with other scenes, you think this guy has to be evil.
Right.
But the way that they've devised my character is so awesome because you can't tell yet what side of the fence he's really leaning towards. And that's what I really love about playing Harding on Blue Book, because he's a patriot, first and foremost. Everything he does is what's the best thing for my country. And that's a pretty awesome thing to do as a human being, as an actor, as anything, and how much I bleed red, white, and blue. And for me, it's really been fantastic to play that character. And I'm really looking forward to, and thank the Lord that we have another season now, what the boys' brains are going to do for us and Valentine and where we're going to go. And, you know, I call us the grumpy old Muppets guys, but there's something to that. And it's every time we're on screen, it's like, all right, what's going on in these guys' heads? And one time you think that I'm the bad guy and Valentine's the good guy. And the other time you see Valentine screaming and I'm quiet. And the way that really divides it is I can't wait to see what happens with these two guys by season 5.
Yeah.
That's really what I'm looking forward to. And everyone, what a blessing to be part of a cast like this and a show like this where I walk down the street now and so many people of so many years have said so much about all my different shows and movies I've been in, which is awesome. It's bonkers. People are going crazy about Project Blue Book. And why is that? It's because the characters that Dave and everyone else has devised, the audience really loves because you're on the edge of your seat. And looking at my kids watching the show, they're on the edge of their seats. Daddy, what's going to happen next? I'm like, well, you got to watch. They never did that with any of my other shows. You know,
that
so
is
it's
awesome.
A smart, entertaining, engaging show. And we're all blessed to be part of it. So thank you, boys.
Let's talk about that sequence when Harding goes in to talk to Rizzuto and Quinn overhears. It's such a great moment because then he upturns the room. He's looking for the bug. It's just a great moment of playing out that twist, that turn.
When Michael showed up, he's such an actor's actor. As Michael just put, we took our time. You really engage in the moment. And a lot of times it's hard to come in as a guest actor a few episodes in because you feel like you're, you know, a relative that's not really invited to the family reunion. But he just jumped in with both feet, elevated all of our games. And it was a blast to work with him and all of us working together and ripping that place to shreds. I mean, come on. That's just like be part of a scene like that. That's what we're in it for. And it was just awesome.
Thanks, man. It really was great. And I mean, the thing is, Quinn and Harding, it's an interesting relationship. I feel like, in a way, he's kind of like a father figure to Quinn. And, you know, I think there'll probably be a lot of fans watching the show that are going to be constantly distraught that Quinn's not caving into Alan and going, all right, fuck those guys. But we don't know much about Quinn's personal life and his family life, which we may find out at some point. But I think from where we're standing right now, he is a father figure to him. He wants to impress him, not just because of the work, but just as a man. He's been there for him. He's helped him to get to where he is. And so that's the biggest bummer about this whole thing at this moment in time, is he feels like his father doesn't trust him.
I trust you. I trust you, son.
Well, that's what I love about where we leave that storyline with Harding and Quinn. Quinn now realizes, wait, you used me. Like, yes. I was the one being interrogated through this whole thing. But then Harding plays on, yes, and now I'm so glad that I can trust you.
Yes.
Right? And so it goes back to this, like, I'm going to promise you great things. Now I really know. And then, of course, you're realizing in that moment something about Hynek, right? It's like, mm-hmm. It's not like the doctor would have anything to do with that. And I love the way that that moment of revelation plays on your face. And then you immediately, you know, right, of course, you know, like you immediately dismiss it.
Yes.
But we're left with this idea of, gosh, like what a tough choice you have to make. All the things you want as a character in terms of rising the ranks are there and are promised to you. But at the same time, the shit you have to go through to get there,
fact that
like you were just completely used and lied to. And like, I really enjoyed the way that that whole story in the episode kind of culminates in that moment.
I don't remember shooting a lot of it. I remember just fuming a lot. It was so much when I was in that scene, just storming out of there and seeing red. And
that was awesome. You crushed it.
Oh, bless
it,
man.
Was great. Luke, I am your father.
But yeah, I mean, the thing is, if Quinn would have decided to just completely go, nah, fuck off, his entire world would disappear.
Absolutely.
And that is no light thing. Not everybody can just completely rebel against their superiors and get off the hook, especially in this kind of situation.
And in a time period, too.
Exactly.
But also, and not to blow smoke for you, not many actors could have pulled off what they did the way that you did it, brother, because you were so in the moment, so in the character, and so torn as to what to do. And you were just relentless in your approach to the scenes, and you know, as all your scenes. I mean, you're fantastic in the show. But those moments were just awesome, awesome, awesome for me as an actor, but me as a fan of the show also, just watching you do your stuff. And it all comes down to the great writing. We're spoiled rotten with the writing we have.
Totally.
Let's pivot back towards where Hynek is this week, because he is off trying to investigate what the heck went on in those woods. And it's really fun because it's kind of like a forensics case for him this week. And you also have another wonderful guest actor in that you have Graham Greene this week.
Oscar winner.
I know. When I saw him show up, I went, ooh, what a week for guest stars. And in terms of both storylines, getting these amazing character actors to come in and really just add so much weight. And in Graham's case, I'm really fun humor when his little comment, the laying the fears of white man is a hobby of mine line.
That's a great line,
favorite of the series, just the way he delivered that. And so when you are putting so much into one episode, what were the through lines for you? Because they did really work thematically this week.
I can't remember case-wise if Native American, that idea, was part of the original case or not, but I know the one thing I can say that we always have been striving to do, and we found certainly, I think, by this episode, which is there has to be a very rational explanation at a certain point. You need to give the audience, you need to give Hynek something to sort of latch on to. So this notion of headbinding and the skulls, which is also really another fascinating piece of the puzzle when you look at the whole phenomenon, felt like a very natural fit, and it gave us that sort of resolution that I felt like the audience would want, Hynek would need, and did sort of tie everything up. One of the things we were like, are people really going to notice we never sort of explained the lights in the sky?
Yeah,
we did
sure.
have a whole, we did at one point have a whole thing about it. Stuff had to get cut for time for script-wise.
Yes.
We definitely erred on the side or leaned to the idea that this was more of a hoax case.
Got
when
it.
You read the case files, it's more of a hoax. So we just didn't have the opportunity to sort of deliver that. And that's why you got that great Inspector Poirot sort of
that's
moment at the end.
And what's always great is like, even though it was deemed a hoax and many people thought it was a hoax, certainly the witness, the Scoutmaster, never claimed it to be a hoax. He's like, yes, I did steal a car and I did get dishonorably discharged, but it's like a boy who cries wolf sort of scenario. And then we are touching a little bit upon the true fact that throughout history, ancient cultures have seen things in the skies that they can't explain. We did some real research into Native Americans, like the stuff with the star people. We wanted to make sure that we found something that we could latch onto that also was appropriate to the area. The actual Scoutmaster case takes place in the Everglades in Florida, but we moved the case to where it was appropriate for the tribe, if I recall, so that it would all align sort of with the historical stuff that we wanted to hit. But there's some nice Easter eggs there, too. Like, he sees the symbol carved into the ancient cave thing.
God, there is a lot in this.
Right?
So
it's like,
a lot.
That's like, it's like, that's the thing that doesn't line up with this whole hoax mythology.
Yeah.
And the real-life guy, by the way, did sell his story.
There was at the time, I think it was Jackie Gleason that offered $100,000 to anyone who could prove alien existence.
That's right.
We didn't want to say Jackie Gleason in the telegram, and it probably got a little short shrifted, but that was a real thing. He offered $100,000 if you can prove it.
Well, tell me about getting Graham on the show. Aside from all of the hoax or the, hey, this happened or this, that, when you bring it back into what the ritual was and the head binding and reburying those remains, it gave it a lot of gravitas.
I'll give Thomas Carter credit for that, our director. Mm-hmm. I think that was the first choice for him. Graham's going to be a first choice for anybody.
Yeah.
Really a wonderful, wonderful man. I spoke to him on the phone before as he was coming out, just as a way of like, I should probably call the Oscar winner that's coming to do a couple days on the shoot. And, you know, checking in, you see the pages, questions, blah, 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 anything you're thinking, blah, blah, blah. His one response, I want to wear a hat. That was it. I was like, nice. I think we can do that.
Right.
I think we can do that.
And so then it does come back into the end where Hynek calls Quinn. But after having gone through the experience that you just have with Harding and with Rizzuto, he's relatively distant in his response on the phone. And that really sets up when you guys come together. Tell me about how you guys were playing and your choices.
Yeah, well, Quinn is obviously full on suspecting Hynek of this theft. And there's a lot of withheld stuff. And I'm just basically, which hasn't happened before, but I'm kind of waiting for this case to play out. You know, I'm not as invested in it because this is a bigger deal in a way to Quinn. So I'm kind of letting Hynek run the show on this in order to be able to talk to him. It's always great working with Aiden, all the nonverbal stuff. And every day you go in, you don't know what's going to happen. And I think we both really enjoy that aspect of working with each other.
And Neil, I wanted to ask, you know, you're a troublemaker with those two.
I think that's part of the device of the whole thing. I'm trying to make sure that, especially in front of Quinn, I need to create doubt in Quinn that Hynek isn't right, that Hynek is kind of still playing for the other team and Quinn is playing for my team. So I'm going to use whatever words I can to belittle Hynek in front of Quinn at any time I possibly can, because I know what he's trying to do and I know that he's got his own agenda, and that agenda does not fit in the plan for me. So whatever Quinn is doing, he's like my little kid. I'm trying to make sure I mold his thought process correctly. Whatever Hynek is doing is probably self-serving for him and not the best thing for our country. And that's my note for myself when I'm with these guys. And I think it works really well. And again, the writing is all there. So all I have to do is show up, really. I'm serious. When you put on the blue uniform and you say these words, it's kind of hard to stink it up. When there's great actors and great words and great sets and great everything, it makes it a whole lot easier for the actors, and the kind of the pressure's off. But again, it allows me to really kind of stick the needle into Hynek a little bit, so Quinn will always be my little boy or my little puppet or however you want to look at it.
I love that.
I'll be a little puppy any day.
Hynek is confronted. He doesn't answer, but he goes back to his little tchotchke that he's stolen, and he hides it in the trunk.
It's a great word,
yeah. Affectionately now named the tchotchke.
Yeah, the tchotchke. Yeah, that's what we should have. Yeah, right. Instead of the artifact. He's been accused of stealing this thing, and now it's like, okay, this is a liability for me. At the end of six, I bring it into the house. I share this with my wife, and now the gig is up. Already, the walls are closing in. I got to get this thing out of the house. I love that beat at the end. He just puts it in the car. We just linger with the object, and it's like, oh, this thing's powerful.
That scene was actually the opening scene of the next episode.
Yep. Oh,
that's right.
Okay.
So we pulled that in. Mm-hmm. It just felt like it needed some sort of a punctuation. So we moved that to the end of the episode.
Good
and
call.
Also, another interesting note, and everyone can sort of read into it what they'd like, including Michael Imperioli's representation. there was a scene we cut out when Harding comes back, basically after having been with Quinn,
right,
with a couple of the guys that we saw earlier in the car, and essentially shakes Rizzuto's hand and says pretty much thank you for your service. He leaves. We sort of linger outside the apartment, and then you hear a gunshot, see blood on the wall.
Whoa.
And, you know, which was pretty severe.
Yeah.
I mean, it's putting Harding in a very particular place and making a very bold statement. And it's also getting rid of that character.
Yeah.
So now that character's very much alive. it leaves a different impression over.
Totally.
There.
I mean, honestly, with Harding, I mean, I'm sure Neil, even you looking at
curious,
that going, well,
Neil,
that
yeah.
would sway a more definitive look at him and his actions. So you were saved from murder, buddy.
Yeah. For now.
For now.
Never pulled the trigger, though.
Well, and that is interesting, too, because Rizzuto was a great addition. He does feel like there could be other future storylines.
Yes.
Potentially.
Exactly.
Down the line.
I mean, he did such a wonderful job that we want to leave that door open.
See, kids, you really want to come in and knock it out of the park, because then maybe you get more days.
that is how it works.
Then we don't kill you.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Then if you do a good job, we don't kill you.
Well, I don't want it to be the point that, oh, you're a guest star on an episode and you're going to be with Neil McDonough, so that means you're going to die. I don't want that.
That's what you need to do for audition. Show them the picture of Neil's with the blood splatter and then the other version and going, you decide what your performance gives you.
Right. We cut out that scene from the chess club where you wound up knifing the guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
like, with a bishop.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
It became a much sweeter scene without that, we realized. You know?
Like, there's going to be an outtakes badass John Wick General Harding movie that's going to show up from this show.
Just everyone he talks to dies.
That would be hilarious.
I'm smelling spin-off right now. Come on, boy.
Yeah. I see a first
It's hard to be Harding.
That's it. I see a first season featurette called It's Hard to be Harding with every awful moment that you didn't quite make it on screen.
I think we do it half hour with a laugh track.
Every time somebody dies, there's a laugh.
This actually tees up next week's episode. The dynamic between Hynek and Quinn is really going to come to bear. Were you looking at these two as kind of a thematic and emotional carry through, almost like a two-parter, or did it just end up happening that way that you could carry through some of these things that you've introduced in this episode?
Because every director shoots two, you always sort of want to feel like they're connected in some way. And so you always have an eye for that. And because we're also serialized to that degree in that relationship and the ongoing conspiracy, you're always having to weave it together. So specifically, you look at one and two, they feel connected, three and four, and just by nature of the director as well.
They pair really nicely together.
They do. As always, I want to thank you guys so much for giving us so much insight. I want to thank my guests, David, Sean, Michael in the studio with me. And then Neil, thank you for calling in on such an important day. We hope that you feel like this was kind of a birthday gift instead
really
of a bad day. But it was a gift for us for you to be here. So thank you.
Anytime I can sit and talk with the boys, it's a happy day.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you to Neil for being with us from afar, and David, Sean, and Michael for joining me again in the studio. And also much love to my podcast team, producer Kirby Dixon, producer-editor Paul Terry, mixer and master Dave Draper, who is truly an auditory genius, and for LA Digital Recording for being our home. Also, to you, if you're enjoying the show, please give us a review and subscribe on iTunes. Positive reviews help with the profile, not only of the podcast, but also it just gives Project Blue Book some love, which we always love to do. And thank you to everybody who has already done a review. We deeply appreciate it. We thank you so much for being part of our show once more, and we'll leave you for another week to ponder everything that we discussed. And in the meantime, keep watching the skies.